Hello, friends. Welcome once again to the Perfect Bound Podcast. This is a podcast all about anything and everything comic books and comics related, brought to you by the Panel Jumper and Comics Engine. My name is Ben. With me, as always, is Chris Casso.
Hello.
Nicole Lamb.
Hello.
Chris Casso. And Chris Casso again.
We're multiplying.
And by the second Chris Casso, I mean, of course, Cole Hornaday.
The happy one.
And welcome to episode 100, Frey.
What?
And today, because we're on our episode 100, we have a very special guest with us. He is Scott Tomlin, the owner of Comics Dungeon. Hello, Scott.
Hello.
Thanks for joining us. All right, so...
And thanks for giving us a space to do our podcast and shoot our web series.
And thanks for turning the heat on.
and bring my dates on when my mom locks me out.
It is still exceptionally cold here in Seattle, Washington. So, Scott, since you're the owner-operator of Comics Dungeon here in beautiful downtown Wallingford, what's it like owning a comic book store?
You know, it's kind of the Bizarro world and the Superman world hitting all at once. You get the fun of enjoying comic books and immersing yourself in that, but then you have that fun blasted with reality of business and bills and payroll and those aspects. But all in all, really a positive experience.
Yeah. Because you haven't had to suffer the candy shop owner syndrome, because you, in your wisdom, actually have a day job.
I do have a day job, and that I think is probably the new model for comic stores too. Is it's the owner operator is struggling mightily in the industry right now. So I think it's moving that way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's you hear stories left and right about comic book stores closing or doing a big ask for help us pay our rent.
Right, GoFundMes and stuff like that.
Yeah.
So what has been your model? I'm sorry, Ben. I know you've got questions, but now
I don't actually. I'm making this up on the fly, please.
So you are what, the third owner of the Comics Dungeon brand?
Yeah, it kind of depends on how you carve out the owner. The original owner was Marv Brost, who's still around. I actually just spoke to him like 3 days ago.
Comes and buys his Goon Comics.
He and Steve kind of co-started the store. Mm-hmm. Steve took over ownership after a few years, and then I bought it from Steve 11 and a half years ago now, which feels just like yesterday.
Mm. Yes, that's exactly what I feel when you bring your children in and they start working here.
It's crazy.
Now, Chris has been involved with the store, though, substantially longer than you, because Chris is now in his mid-70s and has been working at the store
in comic book years.
Precisely, yes. Yeah. In paper pulp years, Chris is in his mid-70s. Aged rather well, actually.
We gotta
put that guy at Mylar, for pity's sake. But and Chris has been working at the store since he was illegal, right?
Other store. Legal in this store.
Okay.
This store is legit.
All right.
This store's legit.
So, but as in running the store, as long as you, what was your model going into it, and how has it changed since you got to this point?
Boy, you know, going into it, one of the first things that we really wanted to do was open it up for much more of a family setting. The 80s and 90s in comics in particular, there was a flood of very, very mature comics. Perfectly fine. I have no problem with the subject matter or any of that. It just creates an environment where you can't bring your family.
Right.
And really to build back that young reader. Mm-hmm. When I bought the store, I'd been reading articles about the average age of the comic reader getting a year older every year, which means we weren't getting in younger readers anymore.
Right. Mm-hmm. It's just the same
dude.
It was
the same people just aging up.
It's true.
It was the same 36 bald white guys coming into the store. And that worried me as a business person because eventually those people will die.
Right.
And
I might kill them.
Yeah. And might be by Chris's hands.
Yeah.
So I really wanted to open it up to new new readers, whether they were children or just new readers. The industry needed to help me out a little bit, unfortunately.
Oh yeah.
Because even 10 years ago, there wasn't much for young kids to read. I mean, we struggled to find young readers. Bone and the occasional Marvel Adventures title, and that was about it 10 years ago.
Well, even looking 5 years ago when you hired me, there was still a really small kid section we were trying so hard to fill.
No, absolutely. And, you know, and companies like Scholastic have done a great job of bringing in some high-talented and well-thought-through stories, and that really helps that genre. But yeah, 5 years ago is really when the industry started to help. And it's also when we started to get more, even more diverse readers, whether it's, you know, ethnically diverse, age, gender, or gender orientation, you know, whatever it is, that really has been in the last 3 to 4 years. And I think it's a huge, you know, obviously it's really good for an industry to have a breadth of consumer base. And, you know, I don't want to say that I saw the need for that because I'm not that clairvoyant, but we needed to see that diversity in the industry. And I started with that. And, you know, eventually it happened, but
took a while.
Not because of me.
So establishing the store wasn't just so you could get your own comics on a regular basis.
Well,
that's an expensive subscription.
It's been known to happen, guys.
It really is. And, you know, and I think with any business, you have to realize that it has to be a business. It has to stay open. And there have been times over the years it's been hard to keep it open. And, you know, because I had the luxury of having another job.
Luxurious.
Oh, yeah. I was able to kind of white knuckle it through a couple times. And I think that's that advantage where I see the other stores that are, you know, using the GoFundMes or closing. They didn't have a second tier. And, you know, I know one of the local owners is selling his own personal collection, which, you know, it makes me sad on not only the geek collector level, but on the personal level that you're kind of selling your kidney, you know, and, you know, it's kind of the identity you have. And, you know, I have the luxury. I've been able to keep that fairly separate. I sold my collection off before I owned the comic store, so I'd already sold my kidney, didn't have another one to sell.
And then you're just regrowing it in a comic vat.
Exactly.
Well, and considering how much the industry is not very helpful to the actual owner, there's got to be something that drives you to keep going even when you have to white knuckle it.
Yeah.
And what would you say that is for you?
You know, there's probably a very personal reason. Primarily, very early on, was one of the advantages of having this store was beneficial for my immediate family. For having something for my kids to learn about business, learn about how to work. You know, my kids, when they were 12 years old, were lugging 50-pound long boxes into comic conventions. And only complaining to their mom, which...
Which
is maybe smart. Selective complaining.
See, lessons you learn. You know, and that's great. But, and, you know, Lainey, my wife, obviously a co-owner with me as well, it's probably our biggest asset that we got out of the store is the life lessons from that standpoint. But I think the second part that kind of keeps me going is the part that I've seen, particularly in the last 3 to 5 years, is that diversity and that opportunity for people to come in, to be in a place where they can be who they are. You know, we all know, we've talked about stories on the podcast of people who can be difficult, who have different personality types, extrovert, introvert, inappropriate vert, whatever they call that. you know, it's part of the industry, but being able to welcome and accept all of that and have that need for that community, I think is so important, and I think magnified to me personally with where the world is right now, whether the US political system, the, you know, other international situations.
Right.
I think that knowing that there's a place you can be who you are, you know, geek or not.
Nerd.
Geek, nerd.
Passing.
You know, exactly. You know, and just come in and know that you'll be accepted.
Right.
And and not have to be someone who you're not.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's talk about the community building, because granted, I have a bias for this store, and I spend a lot more time in this store than I do in other stores in town. But from my perspective,
you spend more money here too.
Well, that would not be a lie. But to my mind, from my perspective, you guys, as a company, invest a lot more time and energy in community building, I see particularly Nicole taking the lead on a lot of those kind of things. Was that something you guys all powwowed about?
Oh, very definitely.
Yeah,
very definitely.
For sure. Yeah.
You know, and not everything we've tried hit, but you know, I think, you know, things like our book clubs. Mm-hmm. Is a good example of reaching out, and I actually have yet to be able to make it to one of the book clubs myself, but to get again people together with those like things.
Chili fight night didn't work well.
Chili fight night did not work well.
We're still cleaning up after that.
wet comic book night. Yeah. You know, it is, and reaching out to the local artists as well, whether it's the small and subtle things that we can do by supporting a local artist on Kickstarter, Shane Davis, Ryan Fisher recently, but also being a sounding board for local artists as well, and doing that. So it's actually where I think more and more comic stores are going. You've seen them happen a little bit in community building around gaming. Some of the comic stores sister that in. But I think that there's going to be other aspects of community that other stores will use to actually differentiate themselves from each other. Because we all sell the same product.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You can find Action Comics, whatever this week's is, at every store. And it's going to be the same book. There's nothing special about that. So what we have to do to differentiate ourselves is, what is our position in our respective communities? Mm-hmm. And it has to be different.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's something to be said about just making sure that the storefront is very welcoming on its own. There's a relatively recent Facebook review we got of a younger kid saying that he used to come here when he was in grade school, and I'm guessing he's like only in his 20s now, and he came here to hide from bullies. So like, safe place kind of deals, which is something that we're pushing right now pretty hard, because we are now part of the SPD police service safe place, where people, if they feel like they're being attacked, they can come here for a safe place.
And we have procedures in which we can get a hold of the police and do that.
Oh, I didn't realize there was more to it.
That's
great.
Yeah, there's a poster in the back room that the staff knows about.
Yeah, we need to make sure that we kind of take care of them. And, you know, if they want to leave, like, we have to track them and know, like, where direction they're going.
Right.
So, yeah, just stuff to take care of people that are, you know, in trouble.
And that's something I think that will be lost when all these brick-and-mortar stores, not just comic book stores, but other, like, community places start inevitably closing. I don't want to say inevitably. That's not true.
It is.
Well, it's like, you know, local cafes. In Seattle, cafes are a big place that a lot of people meet. And you get to know your barista and all that kind of stuff.
Cafes, bars, and coffee shops. And comic shops, I'm sorry. Our place is for people to get to know the staff. People come here because of the staff, because of Nicole, because of Chris, because of John and Sean and Leanne, and I'm going to miss them all. But,
you missed your children.
My children. Haley, Sam's never in here. It is kind of becoming that geek watering hole without the water.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm always impressed at how.
Except at book clubs. There's water at book clubs.
And just lots of tea.
I'm impressed at how many customers' names both Chris and Nicole know when we come in.
Number.
Yeah, it's either a name or a number to them.
Depends how much I like you.
It is. Yeah. It's incredible.
And or hate you.
Yes.
Is there.
Either way, you're memorable.
Is there more? I mean, you guys are doing a great job of building community around the comic books, but is there any more you can do, or have you hit the apex?
Yeah, I think so. You know, we're reevaluating our whole business model, and later this year, hopefully within the next month or two, we'll have a big announcement about some of the big major changes we're making in our store. And I'm very excited about it because it's going to make it even easier for us to engage with the community.
Yeah.
And I think embed with, I don't want to call it an industry, but with segments of society that have kind of shunned comic books for years. Mm. The other day, I had the opportunity to speak at Denny Middle School here in Seattle, mm-hmm. and at Teachers Professional Day, and help educators understand that they can bring comics into just about any classroom,
mm-hmm. right.
to help learning and education. And we were fortunate enough as well, one of the art teachers there had an amazing art student, needed a mentor. And we were able to connect them with a local mm-hmm. Seattle comic mm-hmm. Creator. So
that's
so
great.
So I'm hoping we're going to be able to do more of that. And I think our revised business model is going to give us more opportunities mm-hmm. to do mm-hmm. that, as well as to help the artist community and that side of it as well. So I'm cool. looking forward to it quite a bit.
Yeah, telling educators that comics aren't just junk food for the eyes, I think, is an important step.
I think Absolutely. It's something that's catching on, though, more and yeah. more. I'm finding people that parents and teachers alike are finding it as a good learning tool.
Yeah, but it's a lonely battlefield, Nicole. It's a lonely battlefield.
Reading is a battlefield.
Benatar song?
I was going to Cole led me down the Benatar path. Okay.
Heartache to heartache.
I read an article today about how retailers are getting fed up with Marvel and how Marvel's doing a poor job of selling their product. Do you find that true here in the comic extension? Is
yep.
Marvel yeah. kind of a bad word these days?
The events are they've overstepped their bounds on the events, and Civil War just landed like a dead fish.
Yeah.
And there's other, even like smaller elements. I was just going through the order forms, and I know that they mean to create, they create loopholes to try to increase the desire to order more copies, and that's by variants. And they have like the worst system of doing that. And I like willfully was like, nope. And like just denied each variant along the list because it required us to increase things with no confidence just to get another variant. And I don't, like, that's the worst model. No. Whereas DC's model of, like, you could order any cover you want is, like, actually increase their bottom line on a lot of that stuff. Mm. I don't like the variants, but at least that's a better approach.
Yeah. I think it's an unfortunate part when we go back to talking about people who got into comic stores because they like the hobby, mm-hmm. not because they like the business. Mm-hmm. These are very complicated things to order and
right.
and to figure out. How many should I order, and should I mark them up? Should I not mark mm-hmm. them up?
What's the future trend?
Right. Exactly. And you know, I'm not going to say we get it right all the time, but we certainly play it conservative. Mm-hmm. Certainly, recently have, and mm-hmm. and I think Marvel's certainly got the most complicated system out there.
Oh, certainly.
And and it doesn't help the retailer, who is actually, well, our distributor's customer as a retailer, but. It ultimately is not going to help Marvel, and you can see that with Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
And people are just tired.
Yep. Yeah, and 8 to 10 month long events is just ridiculous. You're going to get fatigued. You're not going to care about the story anymore. Any anticipation was ruined because their scheduling was off too, so they spoiled a lot of it in their future titles.
And this is not the first time this has happened, where the outcome of the big spectacular outcome or the radical changes come about before the actual core series mm-hmm. is completed, which is and that's become the trend, which is just absurd. I don't know why anyone would want to bother.
And there's so many choices out. You mm-hmm. know, I wrote about this a little bit in my year-end review article, mm-hmm.
which you can find on comicsengine.com.
Yeah. Thank you very much. And but There's so many choices. There's mm-hmm. no reason to stick with it if you're not being satisfied.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There is something out there that you will be satisfied, that you will enjoy reading. Go find it. As a retailer, it really doesn't bother me if Marvel or DC or Image is the number one publisher. I don't care.
Mm-hmm.
But because my customers are happy when they have good stories to read
mm-hmm.
And good art to look at. And I don't care who's producing it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Fair enough.
Yeah, another problem is they'll do this classified thing But they won't tell anybody what it is. They've done that on a number of things. Maybe they don't even know.
I know you've explained that before, but what is it?
It's a picture that says classified on it, and it's like, order this.
Okay. So for Free Comic Book Day, we can order all of the free comic books.
So order this redacted comic book.
Yes.
Yeah, it's pretty much redacted. And they have something in the current previews.
So with that in mind, what am I going to do? Order 150 copies of SpongeBob SquarePants, which I know is good for kids on Free Comic Book Day, or this blacklisted comic that like is a mystery. It's just like, for all I know, that could be like Spider-Man shooting somebody in the head. You know, it's just like, what's going on?
Or it could just be something really, really lame.
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, they have a
prelude. Another Harley Quinn cover.
Book.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's some sort of prelude to whatever next event they have, and it's classified.
Right.
Oh.
So it's like, how are we, what? And okay. How do we know?
How are we supposed to sell this?
Yeah. Yep.
Hopefully they've addressed that with their final order cutoff, and we know enough by the time we can adjust. But sometimes you don't.
Nope.
Yeah. Sometimes you just.
Are they trying to create some type of anticipation with the retailers as opposed to when they used to do it? Well, but I mean, that's. I'm trying to apply some sense of logic around this, and I know I'm being foolish to try to do so.
I just picture all these retailers, Jeff Albertsons of the world out there, all lined up. They're the most cynical crowd in the world. You're not going to get through that cynicism.
No. Yeah. I think it's more of they're just not ready. They don't have final art.
I think that's really it.
Yeah. Which is constant problem with Marvel and DC as of late. I mean, every Civil War was supposed to be seven issues, and then it was announced at eight. And Dark Knight Master Race was supposed to end at eight. They threw in that extra Christmas special with the Joker, and then they also just went to number nine. They just announced the ninth issue.
Now I wonder if the slipcase is going to fit.
Yeah,
well, that was all of our first thoughts. They made a slipcase, and now it's like...
So you're doomed for a couple more issues. But that's the thing. Like,
I've lost track of where I'm at with both of those series, because I have to go pick them up and go, okay, where was that? Okay, that person died there. Right. That person died there.
Stability is such a sweet comfort.
I read that.
Yeah.
Have we met?
Oh. That's okay. I'll review Civil War for you today, and you don't have to go buy it.
Which one is it? The one? But did I read that one or not?
Guess what? Maybe
I
won't.
I don't know if I've read that one. Let me see.
Ooh, something happened to a big character.
I know. Imagine that.
Before we move on, let's just talk about a couple of things that happened in the world of comics. Apparently, Brian Michael Bendis is leaving Guardians of the Galaxy. Do we care?
No. I'm happy.
You're happy?
I'm happy. I want to think about who should take over that title now. I'm voting for Jason Aaron.
I'd like Dan Slott.
Dan Slott would actually be a great choice. It'd be a nice thing to get him off of Spider-Man. Not that he's sucking on it. It's just that he's been there for eight years now. I actually, now that you mention that, that's probably better than Jason Aaron. But Jason Aaron's got the Star Wars chops, and he's also got, like, the Thor fun chops.
Doctor Strange.
Yeah.
He's so busy, too.
He's
busy.
Cosmic, that's for sure.
Yeah, he's cosmic. That's true. He can actually write action.
And
so.
I'm all for Bendis getting off of titles.
Yeah.
He's on, like, so many titles, and they're not all that great.
Right.
So, and I think we've had our saturation point with Bendis. A lot of people that I hear feedback on are kind of like, yeah, I liked Bendis 10 years ago.
I'd be interested to see if there's any creator or any artist or author out there who's on multiple titles and just can't keep them straight, and every once in a while something from one title sneaks into another title. Also, sadly, Carrie Fisher passed away a couple weeks ago at age 60. And so we're all mourning over that, but I wanted to ask if there's any Leia-centric Star Wars comic out there that you'd recommend.
There was the Mark Waid, a Terry Dodson run. I'll be honest, though, I found it to be boring.
Why was it boring?
It kind of just retread stuff I didn't need to know.
It did. The one thing I will say for the run that I it gave me impression of Leia's military prowess that is always kind of alluded to in a lot of the Star Wars mythos, but you actually do see it in that book. But other than that, I agree. I think the story was a little flat.
Yeah, just a little flat. And Terry Dodson, I'm kind of like,
I've always liked he and his wife's artwork together. But I didn't branch out much of the rest of the core from the core Star Wars book. I still read the regular title, and I read the Darth Vader title, and I was actually kind of appreciative when they canceled the Darth Vader book. Like, nope, we're done with the story now. We're going to move on, because I was feeling like I am really concerned that the whole Disney juggernaut is going to saturate us with Star Wars.
Well, too deep.
Yeah. I mean, we're looking at, you know, a Star Wars movie every year, more than one TV series.
So two movies a year, I thought, was what they're aiming at.
Well,
I heard one.
Okay, that's fine.
I'll take one every Christmas time.
Yeah, TV series,
yeah.
Though.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we got Rebels and this another live action one. I thought was in the pipeline. And then there's how many comics? There's the core book. There's Darth Vader is canceled. Dr. Aphra.
Mm-hmm. Han Solo just finished.
Yeah, right. There's a lot of miniseries. Okay, so the Poe Dameron
they
series.
They're
doing minis.
Yeah, but they're long. They're maxi series. They're
Some of them. Oh, okay. I think formula is at least two ongoing. And then at least 2 to 3 miniseries, but staggered. Mm-hmm. And those are only 5 issues each. Dr. Aphra, I think, is them just lengthening Darth Vader.
Sure.
Because it's the same writer. It's the same, basically, the one character that was the money maker that came out of that.
Sure. You know?
So that'll be the next big toy coming.
If it ain't broke, man. Don't fix it.
Yep.
All right. I agree. And now Cole is mad at Chris and me because we haven't seen Rogue One yet.
No, so I can't talk about it. And I am the jughead that's like seen it twice already, you know? And I went from thinking it was really overrated and actually kind of disappointed in it to thinking actually it's really pretty awesome. But I did that in the course of a week because I got saturated with the hype, you know. I have many friends on the social medias that are really considerate. They don't spoil anything, but man, it was just all they could do to not talk about how great they thought Rogue One was. Mm. Anyway,
I did hear that the sequel will be directed by George Lucas.
Oh, I heard that too.
Terrible.
Yeah. Gosh, what's it going to be called?
I don't know. Something hope.
Anyway. A New Despair?
But I got to tell you, over the holiday, I sat down with my old man and watched Force Awakens. I bought a copy of it on DVD so he could see it. This is Dick Hornaday. He's sitting there with his arms crossed. We get to the end. The credits roll. I'm like, so, Dad, what'd you think? I thought Jar Jar was in this.
Oh. Was he disappointed because Jar Jar is like his guy?
My old man, my dad is the only person in the known universe who thought Jar Jar Binks was funny.
I think. Yeah, are you sure he wasn't just
Stooges? Because that makes sense.
No.
You sure he was just trying to get a rise out of you?
He knows your nerd button to press. Trigger.
I have some secrets from my dad in this 51 years on this planet. I have some secrets. All right. Okay, but what I found was that I still liked Force Awakens a great deal, even though there's nothing aside from the new characters, characters representing new peoples for us. Mm-hmm. There was nothing. It's just a pastiche. It's just a hodgepodge of all the stuff we liked. But you know, I still liked it. It still made me happier than Rogue One, which is just me.
I'm with you.
Are you?
Actually, I enjoyed Rogue One.
Yes,
but I don't have that urge to go see it again. Mm. But Force Awakens, if it was on right now, I'd watch it to the end.
Yep, me too. Mm-hmm. Yep.
That's the great thing about the first 3 movies. Like anytime they were on TV when I was growing up, they were on. Right. If they were being broadcast, we just turned it on.
They just had that thing.
Yeah. It's a just good background even then.
Exactly.
Star Wars or Clint Eastwood movies. That was my household growing up.
Whereas if you got Jar Jar in the background, you're like, where's the off button? Where is it?
Unless you're Dick Hornaday.
And then you're like, finally, some Jar Jar.
So I did read that Carrie Fisher has completed her scenes for episode 8.
Right. Yeah.
Because that movie is already in post-production.
Right.
Yeah. Because it's going to come out the Christmas time of this year, 2017.
Months, yeah.
So but my question, and I'm sure it's on everybody's mind, it was were they planning to have her character in all 3 of them?
I'm assuming that was the plan.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I imagine you guys have heard about the CGI characters in Rogue One.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Okay, you guys need to see Road Warrior.
No, I know. I heard about him.
Yeah,
I've already seen the ending.
Because they're resurrecting dead people.
Yeah.
They're resurrecting dead people in our Star Wars movies.
It's an interesting dilemma for actors.
And the Uncanny Valley has not been overcome.
Right.
Yeah. As far as I'm concerned.
Well, I mean, Peter Cushing already looked like a video game character.
Fortunately, he didn't emote a lot.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. This is true. This is true. But we are just not.
The designers are like, oh, thank God. Stop. No smiling. Great. No smiling. All
right. One template face. That's great.
That's a very, very good point. But we are just not past that place where they can create a convincing human being digitally.
I don't think I want them to breach that just yet, because then Skynet will have an easier time killing us.
Absolutely. So. Absolutely. But
I'm
what
fine
bothers
with that,
me...
and I'm fine with Skynet. We've had our time.
I just
We're
want
good.
Eyes to look in when my overlord squashes me. Just realize.
You realize. Hold them in vats.
All right, all right, all right. Let's move on to book report, everybody. Let's start with you, Chris. What did you read this week?
I'll skip the Civil War review because I don't want to spoil
because
that.
Because Cole hasn't read it yet.
It's okay. Yeah. So I think I talked about Space Battle Lunchtime once, but I maybe just did an issue or something. So I finished the trade and
did you do a musical interpretation of it at one point? Were you saying all the dialogue?
We lost the documentation.
Yeah, that was too bad.
So this is published by Oni and it's written and drawn by Natalie Reese. And it follows this Earth girl who is teleported into space for basically an Iron Chef competition against other aliens. And the show is called Space Battle Lunchtime. And she's a very like optimistic, hopeful, cute girl who's just sort of like, I just like to make cupcakes. Mm-hmm. And she's up against an array of different characters, which are all pretty fun. There's Chief Neptunia, who's kind of like a lizard lady that the main character has a crush on. There's Chief Melonhead, who's evil. There's Chief Jacques, who is a shrimp in a mecha suit, which looks like a shrimp, so it's a shrimp and a bigger shrimp, which is fantastic. And then there's a bunch of others, and then there's like the show producers and the camera guy, and they're all characters. It's a lot of fun. It's really cute. She has a great art style. This will appeal if you like Being Puppy Cat or Helpless Great Warrior or Adventure Time. It's got a kind of a dark side too, because there's another TV show called Cannibal Coliseum, which is a vulgar derivative where the competitors cook and eat each other. And the villain of the piece, Melonhead, sometimes if somebody's getting ahead of him, he'll get them into that other show and they disappear. So there's like some murder going on in here too. But it's also really cute. And there's like the three judges.
An 8-year-old's that Campbell, totally Campbell can experience
it. Yeah, but it's an all-ages book, unlike
my
endorsement of Beasts of Burden.
Yeah.
Not all-ages book.
And the judges are great too, because there's like a slug called Chief Goops from Slimax 9. There's Critic Bot from The Robot Colony. So yeah, just a lot of good characters. It's a $12.99 book, and I highly recommend it.
Cool.
Space Battle Lunchtime. Mm-hmm. All right. Thanks, Chris. Nicole, what did you read this week?
I'll stick with Old Age, and I read all of the current run of Princeless, Raven Pirate Princess, which is 3 volumes, but it's like kind of like 2.5. Mm-hmm. Kind of cheats a little bit.
Because of all the ads.
Yeah. No, well, because volume one's really tiny.
Ah, gotcha.
And this is written by Jeremy Whitley and the arts, colors, and letters by Rosie Higgins and Ted Brandt. And this is a spinoff from the regular Princeless series that follows Princess Adrian, who's on a quest to save her sisters. She runs into Raven. Raven's a few years older than her, and she's got her own agenda because she was supposed to be like the queen of all of the pirates. She was supposed to carry on this legacy, and her father was totally in line with that and was training her and everything. And the brothers decided that they wanted to have the power, and they convinced the father to relinquish that to them. And she's been on a quest to find them and take them down and claim what is rightfully hers. And it's got a unique cast of characters. There's one of the girls who's the daughter of a friend that a raven knows, and she's all about science, but they don't, it's a pirate land. They're not really, they don't know what science is necessarily. So they're like, you witch, you know, and she's just doing chemistry. But she joins them. And then there's the half elf who is like a thief. And there's another woman who's like super muscly, and she's the second in command, and she's just really sweet. And then there's the love interest, which is her... her friend Zamina, and they have a history because the father, Raven's father, had kidnapped her to use her as leverage. So there's like a lot of animosity between the two of them, but there's really love. So it's an LGBT comic. It's all ages. I think it's a little bit more grown up than Princeless, but only, I think, because Raven's older, so her motivations are a little bit more mature, but I think she's like 17 or something in this. But I still consider it all ages. So does Action Lab, because they're really good about putting coding their material now. So somewhere in here, there'll be a big fat A that says all ages. And I recommend it. It's definitely got a feminist agenda. I don't know if you know this, but Jeremy Whitley is a big feminist, so anything he writes is always going to have that sort of lenient. There, I'll also be reviewing Unstoppable Wasp later, which is what he's doing for Marvel. And so if you're looking for something like that, or if you're looking for like an all-lady team of different women with all different motivations and everything, I highly recommend it. It's been very fun to read. So. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Great. They took out all the ads.
Most
of the Action Lab trades have all the covers and ads, but pretty much as if they just glued them into a big binding.
Yeah.
Oh.
So this one's actually professionally done.
Some of the later ones, though, still have ads in them. Wow. So, yeah, whoever took over the role of collecting everything, stop doing that.
It's interesting. Cool. They don't usually do that in a trade collection.
Nope.
Yeah.
I wonder if that's how they sponsor the publishing of the trades.
Mm. I don't know.
Ooh. A topic for another day.
Thanks,
Nicole. Cole Hornaday, what about you, sir?
Well, I read the Nyx collection from Marvel. This is the complete collection. It was published just this year, but it's... they are the mutant comics from that ran from 2003 and then 2008. That Chris helped me out here. This was post House of M, right? Because
it was
they talk
around.
About District X.
Yeah. District X happened a bit after that.
And the first arc, issues 1-7, were written by Joe Quesada. The first four were drawn by Josh Middleton. The second arc was drawn by Robert Taranishi. But then in the second series in 2008, was written by Marjorie Liu and penciled by Kalman Adrick. Savsky, I think I got that right. I never read these.
Marjorie Liu does Monstrous.
Okay.
Just for our listeners.
See,
her
name sounded familiar.
Yeah,
I didn't.
She's
I got so mired in other research that I didn't get. I wasn't well prepared for this. This caught me off guard. I was totally surprised by how much I enjoyed this collection, because this originally came out in a time when I had really lost a lot of interest in the mutant books, a lot of interest in Marvel, and clearly when I saw the covers for this, they were young, very thin, scantily clad women, most of them dressing and acting like ravers, and I'm like, that book is not for me. But what surprised me about this book is that the scope is not glitzy. It is about inner city kids, runaways, living in the streets, dumpster diving. Yeah, they happen to have mutant abilities, but all their mutant abilities come with a very, very, very high price. And believe it or not, to me, the scope of these stories is more like the Netflix superhero stories than anything else I've read. And Nyx would work as a Netflix series.
Just in case, because it might help if people want to find it. It's for retailers, if you go and ask for it, you want to say NYX.
NYX?
Yeah.
Well, her name is Kaida Nixon, so that's where the name came from. Oh, but it's spelling?
But
you're clarifying.
NYX, yeah.
It's how it's
N-I-X.
Spelled.
Yeah.
Okay, but the truth of the matter is, the reason why I think they're repackaging and selling this is because the third issue of NYX Nyx is the first appearance of X-23, or what is her name, Laura Kinney, or whoever you want to call the new... the female Wolverine, the Wolverine clone.
The all-new Wolverine.
The all-new Wolverine. But the thing is, in this book, they never give her a name. They never give you any explanation. She's actually like this BDSM prostitute who cuts people for money. And but that particular issue, Nyx number three, is that first appearance of this character, unnamed though she is, and cutting people for, like I said,
money.
It's going for bank, you guys. Guys, it's like Nicole and I were looking on eBay. It's going for like $500, $600,
$800. Wow.
Which is ridiculous. And, but this is about probably the only way to get it is in this nice, nifty, slick collection of Nyx NIX, the complete collection. It sells for, retails for $34.99.
It's one of those steep, nice, chunky,
yeah,
Marvel
it is.
Ones,
nice,
like-
slick. Flick pages.
Like a complete collection.
About it's a big book.
Yeah, it's dense. There's a lot of extras in it. It's not something that I would buy, but I'm sure glad I read it.
But so if all the covers have skinny raver girls on them, what made you pick it up?
I actually am enjoying the new Wolverine character a little bit because she's in the all new, all different X-Men. What are we calling that book?
All new X-Men.
All new X-Men. Yeah. And she's always kind of intrigued me because she's clearly a cheap also-ran derivative, but she's still interesting to me for some reason.
Right.
Also because this, I just skipped out in this time period of comics. I really was not buying a lot of superhero comics at this time.
Josh Middleton has nice artwork.
Yeah,
I like Middleton.
Yeah. And I remember this book getting a lot of response from people, so I was curious. So mostly just the curiosity.
All right,
you know, that thing that kills cats.
All right, Scott, do you have a book you want to recommend during book report?
Oh,
I'll put you on the spot.
Blindside.
You don't have to. It's okay.
We could talk about Love is Love.
We can talk about Love is Love.
Yeah.
It's a great book. I haven't read it all the way through. I've read about the first third of it, but Love is Love is a tribute comic done for the victims and families of the Orlando shooting last year.
The Pulse nightclub.
And it's an amazingly touching book. Just, I mean, if you don't get tears in the first third of that book.
Yeah, there's some feels, man.
You are not human.
Yeah.
Is it, I haven't really looked at it. Is it?
It's a big anthology. There's like 49 different creators.
It is an anthology. No, no one has more than a 2-page story.
Oh, my. Yeah.
And some are silent. Some are very deep and very full of content.
Mm-hmm.
This book did something that I don't think any other comic book has. It hit the top 100 bestsellers on Amazon its week it went out.
Really?
Excellent.
And
across all books.
Not just comic books, but all books. And
in our top 100 list, it hit like number 35, 36.
It hit 35 bestseller for us in the year in just being out for 1 week of the year.
Yeah.
So it's an incredible book. I strongly encourage anybody to go read it. Everything was donated to it. The printing, the art, everything was donated to it. So all the funds that they raised from it is going to the right cause. So it's a
phenomenal
book.
And it's not contributors from only one publisher. There's DC, there's IDW. Yeah.
DC and IDW co-published it.
Yeah.
It has guest appearances from Archie characters.
Right.
And from the spirits in
Harry Potter is in there.
I think it's technically the first Harry Potter comic thing.
Right.
As approved by
Rowling. Been approved by Rowling.
Yeah.
So amazing book. It's really enjoyable.
It's a trade paperback, and it's $10.
And it's $10.
It's
an amazing book.
So.
It's already gone to third printing.
Is that right?
All right. Cool. Yeah. Thanks. Love is Love. Check it out at Comics Dungeon. It's on display right at the front counter there.
Hey, and if you are not in Seattle or Washington, we would happily ship it to you.
Exactly.
Some stores aren't carrying it, so.
Says the head of the shipping department.
All right.
Nicole likes to mail
I have
things.
Ways.
All right, well, that's Book Report, and that's our show. But before we go, I want to tell you that the Perfect Bound podcast is brought to you by The Panel Jumper. See everything Cole Hornaday and I do at thepaneljumper.com. And Comics Dungeon right here at 319 Northeast 45th Street in beautiful downtown Wallingford, or 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at comicsdungeon.com. You can find us on iTunes or any other way you get your podcast, or go to perfectboundpodcast.com. Send us an email. Is there a book you want us to review? You want Chris or Nicole or Cole to read something that you like and see what they have to say about it?
Do you have some trivia questions for us for quiz time?
Some trivia questions for us for quiz time. So send us an email, perfectboundpodcast@gmail.com. And speaking of quiz time, get your quiz hats on, everybody. It's quiz time. And this week, the questions come to us from me. And we mentioned earlier, me. Yeah.
You.
Because I think today was me. Okay, yeah. We mentioned earlier that we lost Carrie Fisher a couple weeks ago, so I'm going to ask you some Carrie Fisher questions.
Excellent.
Number one, she played a gun-toting, bomb-setting mystery woman who pursued Dan Aykroyd and John Belushi in what 1980 film? Cole Hornaday.
Blues Brothers.
Yes, sir, the Blues Brothers. Number two, she insisted Gary Fisher accompany her everywhere, even sitting next to her on set during television interviews. Who is Gary Fisher?
Is it her dog?
It is her dog. It's her French bulldog.
Is it the French bulldog with the tongue, the
lolling? Yeah. All right. Number three, acted in this 2001 Kevin Smith film, also starring Mark Hamill, both appearing for the first time in the same movie since 1983's Return of the Jedi, though neither knew the other was in it until filming had wrapped. What is this 2001 Kevin Smith film?
Is it
Cole?
Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back?
It is Jay and Silent Bob Strike Back. Number four, was an accomplished novelist, memoirist, and script doctor. Fisher is also credited with writing one episode of what 1990s sitcom about the Connors and their daily struggles as a working class family? Yes, it is Roseanne.
Oh, is that
Thank
right?
you, Scott.
I had no idea.
It's her only sitcom credit.
Oh, wow.
Although she
that
did,
we know of.
Well, that she wrote.
She was
although,
sneaky.
I did just recently watch her episode of 30 Rock. Have you all seen this?
Mm-hmm.
It's on Netflix. Check it out. Season 2, episode called Rosemary's Baby. And finally, number 5, revealed in her memoir, Wishful Drinking, that she had a brief affair with U.S. Senator Chris Dodd. Democrat, Connecticut. When asked about it, what was Dodd's response?
I don't know.
It'll be really obvious when I tell it to you.
Is this not the affair you were looking for?
No, but you're on the right track.
Oh, okay.
It's about a guy who's trying to just say something was in his past. In a very different...
Oh, that was a long
time ago.
Yes! It was a long, long time ago in a galaxy far, far away. Well, that is quiz time, and that is our show. Thank you, everybody. Thank you, Scott, for sitting in with
Thank
us today.
Thank you, Scott.
All right. And thanks for listening, all of you at home, and we will see you next week.